Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to Flow Guitar Enthusiasts with Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Great tone. Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players as we explore tone and the gear that gets it.
Tonight on the Flow Guitar Enthusiast, we are proud to welcome Lloyd Baggs of LR Baggs Pickups and Microphones. LR Baggs makes some of the best sounding acoustic guitar pickup systems in the world. We have two guitars in studio with us with the Anthem system installed. They were installed by our on-phone guest, including Lloyd, by Monique Carabello. Flow Guitar Enthusiast is proudly sponsored by Sweetwater Musical Instruments and Pro Audio at www.sweetwater.com. And now here are your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. We have a great show for you tonight. I'm really excited about this because this has culminated over several months of putting these pickups in and on some great guitars. And one thing I do want to mention before we start, Kenny Burgo was going to be on, but he has a real early morning meeting over at Sweetwater, so we let him take the night off. So, but I want to thank him because he was the one who kind of put the whole thing together, got the pickups for me. I dealt with him directly at Sweetwater, and also, too, he introduced me to Lloyd and was able to get him on the show. So I just want to thank him for that. Scott, what are you up to?
Same as past 3 weeks. I've been making videos from NAMM Show, so I'm up to about 30 videos that I've posted up on my YouTube channel. Some of the ones I posted up this week are Taylor Guitars, so TC Electronics new pedals, and then the new amp from Marshall. So that's the Jubilee.
The Jubilee. That's a very nice amp. I was really excited about that. It sounded great. Okay, well, listen, let's go ahead and go to commercial, and when we get back, let's get into the LR Baggs pickup systems and talk about pickups.
Hi, Kenny Burgo here from Sweetwater. We're super happy to support Jeff and Scott and the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Show on LA Talk Radio. You can see all the specs and pics of your favorite gear and amazingly low prices online at sweetwater.com or call us at 800-222-4700. Every week, Jeff and Scott welcome heavy experts and industry mavens exploring the coolest guitars and basses, pedals, amps, strings, accessories, everything you need to rock. Sweetwater sells all that cool stuff, so listen to the Flow and then check it out online at sweetwater.com or call one of our pro guitar enthusiasts at 800-222-4700. Don't forget that Sweetwater has 24 months equal payments, no interest financing available too. Check that out at the bottom of every Sweetwater webpage where it says easy financing and hit the red apply now button. Thanks for listening. This is Kenny Burgle and Sweetwater saying rock on with the Flow.
Hey, this is Brent Mason with Jeff and Scott, Flow Guitar Enthusiasts, and enjoyed being on the show, and hopefully we'll get together again, and I'm going to go to bed. It's late. Thanks, guys.
We are back, and tonight we're going to do a very interesting thing. We're going to do, like, in a sense, a shootout. We're going to do a shootout with the LR Baggs pickup against a regular microphone. Technically, there is a microphone in the LR Baggs system, these Anthem systems. There's two pickups, so it's kind of a shootout, but not. But I want to show what it, the difference between what the pickup sounds like compared to just a straight mic. And it's a pretty accurate, it's pretty close. So we'll see what you think. And we have some interesting guitars here. I have my Martin DXM. And it's a pretty great sounding guitar. It's not a real expensive one, but it's a really nice one. And then also I have my friend in studio, Chris Beggs. We've grown up together. He let me borrow his Gibson J45. It's a 2005 with a rosewood back and sides. A very nice sounding guitar, and it has the same thickup. So we have two Anthem systems. With Lloyd, I didn't know this. I was reading the bio, but Lloyd actually started out building guitars. And hey, Lloyd, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on.
Hey, thanks, Jeff. Really appreciate being here.
Oh, it's a pleasure having it's an honor having you on here. So you were building like an archtop guitar, and probably I think the one of the first ones you built for was for Ry Cooder. Can you tell us a little bit about that? And then also to the Catgut Acoustic Society.
Oh, yeah, sure. I'd be happy to. I started out building guitars basically because I sucked at playing them, but I still wanted some connection to the instrument. I love the instrument. So I started building guitars in my garage in Berkeley, California in 1974. And I had met Ry Cooder previously. I was previously in the art business. And so I had met Ry through some art connections, and I started to build this guitar, and I've always kind of backed into things. Like the first guitar I built was a carved top instead of a traditional flat top, and I can't say I've ever done anything too easy. So I started building this carved top guitar, and about halfway through it, I just thought, yeah, man, I'm really loving this, and I bet you Ry would be into seeing this. So I finished the thing about 6 months later and took it down to his home, and he was knocked out by it, and he just asked me right on the spot if I'd build him one, and of course I said, twist my arm a little harder. So I wrapped up some connections up in the Bay Area and sort of headed down to Southern California. I got a loft in an old fire station about a half a mile east of what's now the Staples Center, and kind of established my guitar company down there and started building guitars. And so I wanted to get better, and I wanted to learn, and there wasn't much out there in the world about, like right now there's all kinds of resources to build guitars, and it's like a golden age for guitar builders. But back then there was like one book and it had three chapters on tone. And so that didn't help me a whole lot. So I started getting books on violin making, and because those guys really had their stuff together, so I went through that and found this scientific society called the Catgut Acoustic Society, and maybe some of you guys out there have seen specials on PBS about these guys, and it's a bunch of really eminent scientists who are just passionate about the violin also. So they did all kinds of crazy stuff, laser interferometry and all these tests, and these guys were some really serious rocket science, like real rocket science people. And so they were studying the secrets of the Stradivarius, and so I was able to become a member of this group, and so they sent me all this manuscript, like several thousand pages of this and that kind of tests on stuff. So I inhaled that and went about replicating some of the tests that they had with like basically Radio Shack equipment and guitar amps and stuff like that. But it really helped me to understand the physics of the guitar in a much accelerate my learning curve.
RIP Radio Shack, by the way.
the what did you learn? I mean, they were focusing on violins. What did you learn from that you were able to apply to the acoustic guitars? And Ry, the guitar you made for Ry was an archtop, right?
That's correct.
And you had made other guitars for Jackson Browne, Graham Nash, David Carradine, and Janis Ian. Were those archtops or flat tops?
No, those were actually flat tops. Well, actually, I did make one carved top for David Carradine and then another flat top. But most of my guitars, I migrated back to flat top. But the what I was attempting to learn was basically kind of get a snapshot of how these things vibrate. And mm-hmm. like with lasers, you could actually stop the vibration. It's kind of like a really high tech strobe light, really.
Right.
And so you can actually stop and see the vibrational patterns. And so through this, I learned about tuning the plates, tuning the resonances, making the resonances more harmonious together. And you know, it's kind of like getting a little bit of a peek behind the curtain to see what the thing was actually really doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was tremendously helpful because within a couple of years of diving in, I was able to have a fair amount of control over the voicing of the instrument, and I was making some instruments that I was getting to be fairly happy with.
Oh, okay. So it was you were able to keep it pretty consistent then. It was the tone was consistent between the different ones?
Well, no, I was experimenting. I was going for this rather an even balanced tone because I really was into jazz.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was a lot of my clientele besides some of the bigger names were jazz players, and they were looking for a nice, even, balanced tone. So that's really what I was after.
Mm-hmm.
And like having, you know, like some guitars, the trebles would be really thin. You get great bass, but the trebles would be thin, and then vice versa. And so I was just trying to get a nice balance going on and also make them really loud.
Mm-hmm.
My personality isn't terribly subtle, and guitars kind of tend to sound like their makers, and you know mine always did.
So what are some of your favorite woods for acoustic?
Oh wow, well Brazilian, I love Brazilian, and Koa, I love Koa, and for tops, I'm kind of partial to either German spruce or redwood. I built a couple of redwood guitars back in the day before anybody was using redwood. And I thought they were really great, but they made me kind of paranoid because nobody was using them then, so I only built a couple of them. So, but redwood's kind of gotten this like little cult thing going on now. It's a real sweet wood, and you can buy the stuff pretty cheap at the lumber yard. So it was a good convenient wood.
Now let's move up a little head to the Takamine story. Rye had called you in to come into the studio and check out something. Can you go into detail about that?
Yeah. Well, Rye at the time, about the time I met Rye, he was really trying to play acoustic guitar live. And it was really a struggle back then. And so he had at the time what was probably the state of the art, which was a Sunrise magnetic pickup with some kind of lapel microphone inside the instrument and this refrigerator-sized rack of equipment that he toured and swore a lot at to make it work. I mean, it was painful for him to make it all work. And so he'd show up at my shop every once in a while and have me install this or that in his instruments. And so I hadn't seen him in a bit, and I heard he gave me a call one afternoon and asked me if I'd like to come down to Warner Brothers where he was recording something, there was something he wanted me to see. So I walk into the studio, walk through the control room, and I saw what I thought was my guitar leaning up against an amp, and he brings me in the control room, and he plays me a track off of Bop Till You Drop, just a guitar track.
Mm-hmm.
And here I am in Warner Brothers, like Studio A, with these huge studio monitors and like Neve board, and man, I was on the floor. It sounded so amazing. And so, you know, I was breaking my arm, patting myself on the back, how good my guitar had sounded. And he says, well, that wasn't actually your guitar. Remember I told you I thought Takamine might have been copying this instrument? And I said, yeah. I said, well, that was a Takamine. And I said, whoa, how did you mic that thing? And he said, well, actually, that's what I wanted you to see. I didn't actually mic it. That's this new Takamine pickup system. And, well, that was really a, that was a startling moment for me. I don't think I've ever had such conflicting emotions where I was hurt and felt violated that Takamine had copied this instrument. And then I was also elated because of what I was hearing and pretty much dumbfounded. And so I thanked him and took off. And I remember sitting in my car for about a half an hour, just sort of alternating between being angry and being curious and elated. And that was it for me. I just said, I'm in. This is where the guitar's going, and I'm in. And by that time, I had already been getting kind of tired of sanding and finishes.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really looking for something, and looking for something that I could maybe build more with my brain than my hands. And so anyway, Rye set up a meeting with then president of Takamine, Mr. Harade, at the 1979 NAMM show, which was still in the Disneyland Hotel. And so we had a nice meeting together, and he asked me, you know, basically he came right to the point. He says, well, what do you want? And I said, well, honestly, I make 10 guitars a year, and your pickup is really attractive to me. I know you don't sell them to anybody, it's your pickup, but I'd be, you know, all I want to do is I just want to buy 10 pickups a year from you. And, you know, he kind of looked at me sideways like, what? That's it? I said, yeah, that's it. I just want a way to amplify my own guitars. And he just stuck out his hand with a big grin. And he said, sure. So about a month or two later, the system arrived at my place. And, well, it was about the size it was big. Probably weighed a couple ounces. And it wasn't anything that you could really easily retrofit to a guitar without ruining it.
Mm-hmm.
And so... basically, I took it apart and tried to figure out what was going on in there. And little did I know, I realized how sophisticated it was, but I was a little too, I don't know, just naive. So the idea at that point was basically to replicate that sound, but put it into a package that could be retrofittable in somebody's guitar without ruining it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where the LB6 came from. So I basically sort of stopped building guitars right at that point. And I couldn't find any piezo commercially, so I started buying those Barkisberry hot dots and scraping the outsides off of them and scraping getting the piezo out of those to start building pickups. And, you know,
that's
after a
creative.
While... You know, it's like, you got to do what you got to do, you know? So,
right.
After a year, I had two pickups that would do the same thing about 3 out of 5 times. And I was kind of encouraged to continue. Some musicians were getting kind of excited about it. And so anyway, that's what got me into the business. And so I really have Rye and Takamine to thank for it. And you know, I'm great friends with Takamine now. We've actually done some projects with them, and you know, I'm grateful to Takamine rather than angry anymore. They've given me such a gift, and like there it was, my career laid at my feet. So you know, I'm just tickled.
Well, let me ask you. At that time, I'm going to kind of try to trace back the history and the development of the pickups so we can get an idea of how yours evolved. And also, I want to get your take on these different types of pickups so you can tell me
sure.
the good points and bad points. Obviously, I think one of the earliest ones was like the one on the Gibson, was it the J130E that like the Beatles use, which was like a regular guitar pickup on up by the neck.
Right.
And then I remember the first Peitzel for me that I saw, especially at NAMM, was the Ovation, where it was actually the bridge itself. And it was better. It was a little more controllable, but I remember it had like a kind of a clacky sound to it. And
yeah.
Then I saw people started using the Barkus Berry dot, the hot dot you're talking about, which glued onto the bridge. And I saw several people using that, and it sounded actually pretty decent.
And, yeah, that was a pretty decent pickup.
And then there was Countryman was making one. I forgot what the process was for that one, but I remember
that was actually a microphone.
Oh, okay. And then the then I had heard in an article, I think it was in Guitar Player years ago, that James Taylor started using a little Sony lavalier mic, and he popped in their little Omni in there, and
yeah,
he was
uh-huh.
using that. And then you just said Rye was using that. That was popular, too. And it's interesting because your system incorporates both. It has a microphone and the Anthem system, especially. It's a microphone and a contact pickup. Now, those different things, what's your take on like the hot dot and all that? What was the good points, mm-hmm. the bad points, and what was happening with that?
Well, I think the most important thing to understand is it's like a continuum from a pure string pickup all the way to a microphone.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got a pure string pickup would be in a like the original Ovation pickup was pretty much pure string. It didn't hear a lot of body. A magnetic pickup, pure string, but with some character. A contact pickup, here's more body or here's only body. The hot dot was actually embedded in the bridge, and that was kind of neat because you could vary how much string to how much body ratio you wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got the class of pickups that go underneath the bridge. They're called bridge plate transducers. The Frap was really the first really mm-hmm. good one, notable one. And then there's been like the K&K, and we have our I-Beam. And those hear more body, but they tend to be a little more prone to feedback. So if you think of a microphone for a soloist versus a choir mic,
mm-hmm.
it kind of depends on how far you want, what you want to hear. Do you want to hear more choir? You want to hear the soloist? And so when we developed the LB6, my idea was just I wanted a little more body in the thing. So I built it into a saddle and built it so it had a little bending instead of just pure compression. Because mm-hmm. that Donald Duck sound, quacky thing, comes from pure compression.
Yeah.
So the LB6 was kind of a refreshing change at the time. I don't know if it sounded as good as that Takamine pickup, but you could put it in your guitar and not ruin it. But there was guys out there like Ricky Skaggs was actually buying Takamine pickups and Takamine guitars, scavenging the pickups out of them and putting them in these priceless old Martins. They were actually a really good pickup. So it just depends on where you want to be. And like with the microphone, you always had to pair the microphone with another pickup
mm-hmm.
because you couldn't get away with using too much mic. There's several reasons for that. One was feedback, and one was honestly the inside of a guitar sounds like a trash can.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want to hear that. So you had to do all kinds of EQ to the mic. And then, you know, if you're in front of a wedge, well, you know, you might want to poke the mic a little bit out of the sound hole, but it'll hear a little more strings. But then you get yourself in front of a wedge and it would squeal on you. So, you know, it's kind of a funny balance. So balance actually is the correct term.
So
what you're always looking for is a balance. And the balance really has a lot to do with the environment that you're playing in. Like, you know, from coffee shop to arena, there's you can get away with a lot in a coffee shop that you may not be able to do with in arena,
right.
Unless you're on in-ears. So we've always tried to make the most flexible thing possible and bulletproof, so it's just, it has to be useful. Doesn't matter how good it sounds. Anybody can make something that sounds great.
Mm-hmm.
But making something that sounds great that you can take on stage and use in the trenches, that's a whole different equation.
Right. So the Piezo gives you more of the top end, and the microphone gives you more of the body, the fullness? Is that right, or is it?
Well,
the other
that you know what, that's the traditional way of using it. Well, traditionally you'd use a microphone for the top end, and you'd use the pickup for the bottom end.
Okay.
And that's been the scheme all along. So like with Rye and that Sunrise, or James Taylor and the Sunrise and the mic, you'd use basically you'd get the fundamental and the bass range from the microphone, and then, I mean, from the pickup, and then you'd use as much microphone, kind of like a woofer tweeter.
Right.
And so that was kind of what we did with our duet back in the day. We employed a crossover using the pickup for the low frequencies, which it does a really good job of.
Mm-hmm.
And that completely got rid of the quack. And then we used the microphone for the top end, but still it was mostly pickup and just a little bit of microphone to really, in essence, deodorize the pickup.
Mm-hmm.
And so with the Anthem, we completely flipped the equation. The Anthem microphone, which we were just awarded a patent on a couple of weeks ago, and it is what's called a sound pressure microphone, or a pressure zone microphone,
mm-hmm.
like they use on conference tables,
mm-hmm.
where a guy down at the end will be just as loud as a girl in the middle, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the physics of the microphone kind of average the sound of anything that's hitting the boundary and reflecting. It creates this weird little microscopic zone where it actually reflects. So we stuck this microphone on the bridge plate. It's a pressure zone microphone, and it averages what's going on over much of the guitar top. So instead of being so specific like a contact pickup, it actually gets a good average of what's going on inside the top.
Mm-hmm.
But the real problem was the nasty sound inside of the box. There's just no way you can EQ that out. So our patent is using a pressure zone microphone in conjunction with a noise canceling capsule, which basically means the backside of the capsule is just as open as the front. And so anything hitting the diaphragm simultaneously gets canceled out.
Mm-hmm.
So this microphone is really weird. You can hold it in free air and you can talk into it, and it won't hear a thing you're saying.
Oh, wow.
And nothing. Or you can put it on a wall, and it won't hear a thing you're saying, like nothing. But if you knock on the wall, it hears what's going on in the wall in that microscopic boundary on the surface of the wall. So you can knock 4 feet away from it, you can knock near it, it's kind of similar. And there's over a 20 dB difference between what's going on in the room acoustically and what the knocking sound would be. So that has allowed us to run the microphone down to about 250 cycles before we use a crossover to cut it off.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you're hearing with the Anthem, the old school was you get about 6 octaves of pickup and a couple of octaves of mic. Now it's just the opposite. You're getting about 6 octaves of mic and a couple octaves of pickup. And we're just using the pickup almost as a subwoofer, just to give it a little bit of punch and some more solidity, because in a lot of performing situations, even if you could get away with using nothing but a mic, it wouldn't be appropriate. So the Anthem is a combination, but what you're hearing with the Anthem is mostly mic. And we've actually taken the Anthem microphone and recorded it on a spot inside the guitar, moved it outside, and stuck it on the top of the guitar, outside the guitar, recorded it also. And you really can't hardly tell the difference. So the real trick of the Anthem microphone is that we've taken the box out of the equation, so it acts like the microphone is on the outside,
mm-hmm.
like a traditional condenser microphone. So that's really been the breakthrough in that microphone.
Okay, well, what I'm going to do now is I have the J45 on. playing. I have it on my, and I'm going to play it. Let's first listen through it through, I have an Audio Technica microphone here, so you can hear acoustically what this guitar sounds like, so everybody can get an idea. Very nice mellow sound. Okay, now let's go to the pickup, and I'm going to go, I think, all the way to the back. I'm rolling the mix function all the way towards the bridge, which I think is the piezo.
That's going to be all pickup.
Oh, I'm going to, we're muting my mic so you can hear it. This is straight through the board. Now I'm going to move the mix all the way up towards the neck. Now I'm going to try it so you guys can hear. Now I was finger picking there. Let me grab a pick because it'll bring a little more sparkle. So now I'm going to move the, first of all, let's hear the microphone straight. Okay, that's with a pickup, with a pick. Okay, now I'm going to the same thing, to the transducer. I'm rolling the mix all the way to the bridge. Okay, now I'm going to move it all the way up to the neck. And now I'm going to mix it into the middle. Let's see if I can get this into the middle. Okay, here we go with both of them. Okay, really nice. I mean, it's real responsive. It's just, it's really right in the pocket. So, okay, now, one question for anybody that's interested, and I'm going to direct this to Monique. Installing this, is this something that's fairly easy to do, or, you know, what do you have to watch out for? I know my Martin had a little bit of some issues with it, but can you explain a little more about what that entails?
Well, the Martin wasn't too much of an issue other than I don't like drilling holes in beautiful guitars. But no, it was fairly easy to install. I know that, you know, reading the schematics on it, and I said to get an experienced luthier to do it. But it was very well spelled out, you know, and there was really no hang-ups other than, like I said, my nervousness about drilling. You know, I just I'm always very careful with that sort of thing.
Right. Now, but I mean, this isn't something that, I mean, I'm not a, I work a little bit on my guitars, but I don't do major work. This is not something anybody can just put on a guitar, or is it fairly easy for the non-guitar tech person, or you really should have a professional do it?
Well, I would say in terms of altering the body of the guitar, that's where the professional needs to step in. Mm-hmm. If your guitar is already set up and has all the holes drilled into it and everything, it's fairly easy. As long as you read instructions with, you know, with guys, you know, it's like kind of asking them to look at a map.
Yeah.
Not a lot of them like to look at the map.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
We don't have to look at a map. We have Google.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I've seen a lot of people think they can do something and they don't really know what they're doing, and then they put everything in the wrong spot. So...
Now, you had told me a little bit about, besides the drilling of the hole, I know that you had just mentioned, but we had some issues with trying to glue it. Can you talk about that a little bit? It's just this guitar. It's not a thing with the pickup itself, but you had to do some modification to in getting it to mount under my sound hole. Can you talk about that a little bit on the Martin?
Right. Well, it wasn't a major issue. It was just where the bracing was on that Martin. And where you wanted to put that volume tone control, the bracing was in the way. So I had to stack the adhesive tabs so that it would be flush and lay solid against the face of the guitar because it was teeter-tottering over the bracing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's not a huge modification, but, you know, I didn't want that jiggling around in your guitar. So I just had to, like I said, stack it and make sure that when it did sit against the face of the guitar that, you know, all the adhesive strips were sticking flat and flush and not jostling back and forth.
Yeah, it's pretty firm. It's pretty firm. It's holding pretty well. So.
Well, that's good. That's good. I was just a little bit nervous about it just because, you know, it's kind of one of those things where you take the little strip off and you're like, okay, you got one shot at this. That's it.
Yeah. Okay, well,
You take it, you stick it there, and then all of a sudden you realize, oh, boy, now I need to take this up a few notches.
Mm-hmm.
You pull it away, and now you feel like, oh, boy, now I lost some of the sticky from the adhesive. So, you know, that was the only issue I told you about right away when I gave it to you. I said, make sure that thing stays, because I had to pull it away after I put it on and redo it. So
yeah, no, it's pretty firm. Now, I have the Martin with me, so let's go ahead and do the same demo that we did with the Gibson so you can hear the difference. So this is now the Martin through the microphone, the straight microphone, right? Okay, now, this is the pickup towards the bridge, so the transducer, if I'm correct? Okay, and now we go to the, I'm moving the mix down to the where it's going towards the neck. Here we go. And now I'm going to mix it into the middle so you get both pickups. Hang on a second. And I think that's good. Here we go. Now, I want to mention also, too, that the I'm running the guitar right now, directors, no processing. It's a very raw sound, but it sounds really good considering that, I mean, we're going to show a little bit later. At the end of the show, I'll play a little bit, and we'll wet it up a little bit, reverb, and it just sounds really beautiful. But the that's a good cold test, and it's working pretty well. But the I think it's probably one of the closest I've heard to as close you can get to miking, straight miking. Oops, no, that's okay. Oh. Go ahead, Larry. Were you going to say something?
Oh, thank you.
Now, let me put the guitar down for a minute and let me go through because we got about 10 minutes left and I want to cover a lot. There's still more. So the first pickup, that the LB6, is that the one you mentioned on your bio that you were approached by Godin, and was that the
one
they were using that pickup on their guitar? Because that's one of the first times I was aware of your pickup was that a friend of mine has a Godin and it sounded great. It was a gut string and it sounded really cool.
Thanks.
What I wanted to ask you though is now especially with the Anthem system, you make a classic system for classical guitar. Is there any difference, or what did you see?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Can you go into that?
Yeah. Classical guitars, and I'm sure Monique will corroborate this, that nylon string guitars and steel string guitars are as different as boys and girls.
Oh, big time.
and so if you use a regular Anthem on a nylon string guitar, it would just drive you right out of the room. It's horrid. So it took us about a year to get a hold of the classic guitar because it's a different animal. So we make a specialty one for that, and I think people are responding to it pretty well out there.
What is it, the difference in the transducer or the piezo? I mean, or both?
Well, it's the same. The elements are identical. The microphone and the pickup, they're both identical from instrument to instrument. It's just the voicing, and there's a lot of stuff going on inside of the preamp we do some very selective compression in certain frequency ranges, mm-hmm. and there's all kinds of stuff going on inside the circuit that's just vastly different for the nylon string instrument than the steel string.
So, Lloyd, I have a question for you then. Have you guys considered voicing pickups for different size and bodies of guitars? So something from a jumbo all the way down to a small-bodied instrument. Is there different pickups for that, or how do you guys handle that?
Well, you know, honestly, that's probably our biggest frustration. It's not that difficult to make something sound really good if you've got a really specific target, but we have to kind of do this bell curve thing. And so some of our most successful ventures have been with guitar companies that we actually will tune them to their guitars. We've never found that jumbos per se or dreadnoughts per se or triple O's or whatever have enough in common to really get that fine with them. But we have done some collaborations, like with Breedlove. We've got a couple of systems that are tuned specifically for them, and oh my gosh, they're wonderful. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot that, you know, that's one of the reasons we also provide outboard EQs with the venue and some of our other things, because it's kind of like, in a way, it's like having a vocal mic voiced for a bunch of different kinds of singers. You just have to kind of, you know, just hope that it portrays the voice closely enough, and then you can build on that with EQ and other processing.
Mm-hmm. Let's go through a little bit of the different pickups so we understand what the applications. I have the Anthem, which has the piezo and the transducer. They has both elements in there, and you can mix it. You have a Lyric, an M80, an M. Is it M1 series?
One,
and then
yes.
LB6. Can you go through those real briefly and just kind of give us the points, what you would use one for?
Sure. The LB6 is our classic. It's got this kind of real big, in-your-face but not obnoxious sound. A lot of people use them for arenas, like, you know, James Taylor, she's still using them. Paul McCartney's using it. Vince Gill, Janis Ian. A lot of people like that. It's bulletproof. It's arena-ready, and you don't have to do much to it. So then we moved into the magnetic. Well, actually, we moved into our undersaddle with our ribbon transducer and now the Element. Element undersaddle pickup is possibly the best undersaddle pickup we've ever built, and it's probably the most reliable pickup in the industry. Like, we get like one or two back out of 10,000.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the Element pickup is the pickup that we use with the Anthem and by itself. We build a bunch of systems around it. And then the magnetics, the M1 and the M80, the thing with those guys is they're both body sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
So, and what we're doing is we're floating the humbucker coil underneath the magnet, and it actually picks up the vibrations. Because it's floating, it acts like a dynamic microphone, so it picks up the vibrations from the body. The M1, that's used by Tom Petty and David Gilmour, and that's another arena situation. But it picks up, it's almost like having a little bit of microphone built into your signal, but mm-hmm. it just plug it in and go. The M80 builds upon the M1, where, like, on the M1, there's just a little body sensitivity, probably above about 1,000 cycles.
Right.
But we learned how to harness it with the M80, and so that has body sensitivity all the way down to, like, 40 cycles. And so it's really rich and warm and comfortable, and it's probably about 30-40% body.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a real interesting, natural sounding pickup. And then you've done a great job of covering the Anthem, and then the Lyric is just the microphone. There's no pickup in that whatsoever. We've got guys out there using it in big situations. Ricky Skaggs using it. Sturgill Simpson's using it, but it just doesn't have that big huge low end that you get from a pickup. So depends on your preference and your playing situation. So and the lyric has been done really well for us too. It's probably the most natural sounding thing that we've ever built, but it does require a high level of you got to be a fairly high level practitioner to use it. I wouldn't recommend it for a teenage garage band with a Marshall stack, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, do all these pickups have batteries in them or no?
Yeah. Well, the LB6, you can use that by its own passively, but everything else we build preamps into. And all of our preamps are all discrete Class A FET studio quality stuff. So it's real quiet and real clean.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the preamps. I'm going to go through those. And then you have a new Stompbox DI, the Session, and we'll talk about that too. But you have the Venue DI, the Para DI, the Belt Clip, and the Session. Let's go down the line with those and what the advantages and what the uses are.
Well, the circuitry is all about the same.
Okay.
As far as the basic input, the way that we treat a pickup is a discrete FET input stage, and it's biased to sound a little bit like, as much as you can push it to sound like a tube, it's better than an op amp. It's not so clean and clinical. So you get some building tone there. And then like the Belt Clip preamp, it's very simple. It's just for somebody that needs to preamp. Most of the all piezo pickups need some kind of preamp. So it's built for somebody that just wants a really simple preamp. And then the Para DI, some people affectionately refer to it as the brick. You can use it as a hammer. You can, it's kind of a Swiss Army knife. It was kind of like the first DI that combined EQ and some of the survival tools that you needed on stage with a DI. And so it's really a flexible thing. And Para DIs are like all around the world. It's like, it kind of blows my mind. It's like, yeah, I'll walk into a club here or there and see an acoustic musician. And I'm always looking at the stage and, there's a Para DI, So, and it'll be beat up and taped up and, all kind of stuff. It's kind of cool. And then the Venue is like a Para DI on steroids. And we built the Venue all around an output transformer so it could effectively eliminate ground loops. And the transformer was really expensive, so we wanted to give some value, add some value to the transformer. And so that's why we decided to build in the tuner and some other EQ features and some sweepable mids and stuff like that, two sweepable bands of EQ, and the mute and the boost function. And like our latest preamp, the Session, which I'll get into in a second, you can run over it with a truck. We have actually done it.
That's heavy duty. That is heavy duty.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, the stuff takes a terrible abuse out there. And my worst nightmare is being at a show and having something that we make go down. I mean, that's just keeps me up at night. So, our whole team is really committed to, we test everything we make. Every single pickup is tested in a guitar. Every single electronics product is tested, oscilloscope tested, sweep tested. We have so much testing, you couldn't believe it. So when something goes out of our doors, we're all going to sleep at night.
So what is the Session now? This is something that's not out yet. It's coming out soon, right?
That's true. The Session came about from our video production. So we've been doing live performance videos with artists, mostly in Nashville, like Ricky Skaggs, Valerie Toon, John Oates, Sturgill Simpson, Kathy Mattea. And so we would track, honestly, they were kind of product demos in a way. So we would track all the musicians with our pickups. And we would, when we got them back from the mixing engineer, they sure sounded a whole lot better than they did at the actual session. And so we started digging into this. And we were able to get a couple of our mixing engineers to kind of spill the beans and show us what they did. And there, we found out that there were two primary tools that they employed to make things, besides reverb, to make things sound all juicy and warm and wonderful and like a CD quality. And one was some form of distortion or harmonic enhancement, like tape head distortion or saturation or whatever you want to call it. It's basically a form of distortion.
Right.
And then, like tubes, add harmonics. Harmonics are really good. And then the other one is multiband compression. So it's targeted compression at certain frequency ranges and you can almost think of it like touch-sensitive EQ. So like your guitar, the harder you play it, the different it sounds different. So if you've got a static EQ doesn't really do a good job, it's better than nothing, but a targeted compression in a certain band of frequencies is very beautiful. And so you can use a lot more than you would think, but it's controlled by how hard you hit the string.
Right.
And so it's way more dynamic and way more interesting. And so basically the Session DI, we have built a saturation and a multiband compression both on one knob into a DI, so performing musicians could have something more of a studio mixed and mastered sound for live play.
Oh, okay. It has that circuit, or does it have the same EQ and all that stuff of the venue, or is it just that specific circuit?
No, it has the multiband compression, which is kind of like a one-stop shopping EQ.
Okay.
In a way, it's like the green box on your camera. Like, you can't hit a bad, you can't shoot a bad shot with the green box.
Mm-hmm.
It'll give you. It's not a remedial EQ, but if you've got a decent sound system and you're playing in an okay place, it could replace the venue EQ, the EQ in the venue, or the EQ in the pair DI. But then depends on your situation. If you're playing at Lower Broad in Nashville in the trenches, you're probably going to need all the help you can get. But they're clean enough that you can run one into the other and still have a great sound.
Oh, that's good. So you can use them in tandem. That's pretty good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They're super quiet. They're all discreet, kind of good stuff.
Well, we're out of time. I knew it would go so fast. And there's just so much to cover. We'll have to have you back on again.
And, oh, I'd love to. Thanks for having me. It's been a blast.
It's truly a pleasure. Now, what I'm going to do to take us out, and thank you too, Monique, for putting this stuff in. These guitars are awesome. They sound really good. So what we're going
to
do?
I'm going to have to listen back because you couldn't really hear it too well from.
Yeah, your phone. But the what we're going to do now is go ahead and wet it up a little bit, and I'm going to play out. Both of you guys, hang on on the line, and we'll as soon as we're off the air, we'll go back on. I just want to thank you both, and
we want to thank Sweetwater.
Sweetwater and Kenny Burgle. He basically got it all together. This was this was fun because we really got to show the difference. I think we showed the difference. You can hear the difference or how close it is towards just a straight microphone, external mic. And that's what I was trying to show. And these pickups are amazing. I'm just really happy.
Well, thank you.
Okay, so anyway, we will see you guys next week. I'm playing the J45 right now. I'm just going to do a real simple finger-picking thing to take us out. And everybody have a great week, and we will see you next week.